This program is presented by a community producer through Midland Community Television. The City of Midland and MCTV are not responsible for the content of the program. The views presented do not necessarily represent those of the City of Midland or MCTV. If you would like to produce your own program, contact MCTV at 837-3474 or access our website, cityofmidlandmi.gov/MCTV.
Welcome to tonight's candidate forum, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of the Midland Area and Midland Community Television, or MCTV. This evening, you will be hearing from general election candidates for State Senate District 35 and State House District 95. I am Kim Steinke, president of the League of Women Voters of the Midland Area. The League is a nonpartisan political organization that works at the national, state, and local levels. Membership in the League is open to all people age 16 and over, both men and women. We are committed to the informed and active participation of citizens in government, and we neither support nor oppose candidates. We always welcome new members. Information about joining the League is available on our website, www.lwv-midland.org, or you can ask any League member about us. Also, at the conclusion of tonight's Senate forum, during the brief intermission to set up the State House forum, please stay tuned for a presentation of the three state ballot proposals. Here is an overview of how tonight's program will run. We'll cover candidates for the State Senate and State House in two segments of the program, with the two candidates for a race in each segment. At the beginning of each segment, I will introduce the candidates and give each 2 minutes for an opening statement. After each has given the opening statement, I'll pose questions to which you will be asked to respond. Each candidate will be allowed an initial response to each question up to 2 minutes, as well as reply after each has had an opportunity to give an initial response. Replies will be limited in length to 1 minute per candidate. Speaker order has been determined. That order will be maintained in responding to questions throughout the forum. Following the question and answer period, each candidate will have an opportunity to make a 1 minute closing statement. Sandra Houghton and Carol Locker are our official timers, and I would ask them to recognize themselves for you to see them. They will raise a warning card when the speaker has 30 seconds, then 15 seconds, and then when time is up. I will stop the speaker, allowing only the completion of the sentence. Before we get started, I ask the audience to please refrain from any vocal reactions for or against any candidate or statements made by the candidates, and to applaud only when the moderator has announced that the forum has ended. Now let's get started with this first segment to hear candidates for Michigan State Senate District 35. The candidates are from left to right, Democrat Kristen McDonald, and a Republican Annette Glenn. State Senate District 35 covers parts of Midland, Bay, and Saginaw counties. We'll start off with opening statements. Ms. Glenn has the privilege of being first to give her opening statement. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Good evening. It is just really great to be here. I appreciate the league sponsoring this again. I've been a state representative for almost 4 years, and during that time, I've had the ability to work and collaborate with the community as we've recovered from the dam devastation. And that happened even in the middle of COVID, so it was quite challenging to work through, but it has been a great community to work with. I'm also been married 39 years, and for the last 7, we've been dealing with stage 4 cancer, which means I understand firsthand how complicated medical situations can be and how much impact prescription drugs can be for your family. I'm also the mom of 5 grown children, so it has been interesting, challenging, as we've watched them raise their families and deal with the rising prices of gas, groceries, housing, and energy costs. And listen to them have to make decisions that even 6 months ago, the prices would not have required them to make. I'm also the grandmother of 9 absolutely amazing, talented, and gifted grandchildren. And I can tell you that nothing is more impactful to me than making sure that they all have the quality foundational education they need so that they absolutely can achieve whatever their dreams are, whether it's to own their own business, whether it's skill trades and onto the gold collar jobs, or whether it is simply that they want to go to college. We want to make sure that not only my children, but your children and grandchildren, even great-grandchildren, have those same opportunities all throughout the district. I also want to make sure that they can walk safely to school every single day. I'm also the sister to 2 sisters and 4 brothers, 4 of which have taught in education. So having their back and listening to those conversations as they help those kids recover from learning loss during COVID. I'm also a small business owner who happened to buy a business at the time we had the last economic downturn and had to make payments without having any income come in. I will continue to work hard for you. I'd appreciate your vote.
Thank you. Ms. Rivett, you have the next 2 minutes.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everybody. I want to start by also thanking the League of Women Voters for putting on this debate. My name is Kristen McDonald Rivett, and I am the Democrat running for the 35th State Senate District. This is a really big race, and it's getting a lot of attention, probably more than we bargained for. And I'm sure most of you here are well aware of where I stand on the important issues, the kitchen table issues, higher paying jobs, affordable childcare, and I'm really looking forward to answering those questions today. But I want to start by saying that I'm not here to engage in personal attacks on Representative Glenn, but I think it's really important to look at the record. I'm here to ask you as voters to take a good, hard look at elected officials and candidates. You have to hold us to a higher standard. Hold me to a higher standard, because we're in a really critical moment. And with all due respect, Representative Glenn has been in the Michigan legislature for over 4 years, and things are not better. In fact, they are much worse. It's time to ignore the rhetoric, the nasty attacks, and take a good, hard look at what's actually being accomplished. And the truth is, not much. Look, I'm not a career politician. I've served on the Bay City Commission, and I did that. I've done that for 3 years. I've done that because I wanted to make my neighborhood better. But I'm not here because it's the only job I have. In fact, I have spent the last 25 years working on public policy and critical issues for our children and our families. And I have a track record of getting very big things done across sector and party lines. I'm running because, like you, I said enough is enough, integrity matters, things are really bad for a lot of families. Instead of solutions, all we get are partisan attacks and political games. And I knew it was not enough for me to sit on my couch and complain about elected officials not getting anything done. So I stood up. This is a time when we need rational, committed, everyday members from our communities moving into leadership positions and working towards solutions. I've spent my career doing just that. I look for your support on November 8th.
Thank you. Thank you for that introductory information. Now let's begin hearing your answers to questions that members of the Midland League believe will be of interest to voters. I'll let you know when it's your turn to answer each question. Also, I will repeat a question for anyone who asks. Ms. Rivett, we'll take your response first to the following question. Do you support or oppose Proposition 22-1, the proposed amendment to the state constitution, which would require annual public financial disclosure reports by legislators and change state legislator term limits to 12 total years in the legislature. Why or why not? Please be specific.
Sure. I do support Proposition 1. I think that what we have seen since term limits came to Michigan is legislators that are moved very fast through a process and very little time before they can develop expertise, before they start taking very important leadership positions like the Speaker of the House, the Chair of Appropriations. I think that the more time that someone has to spend in a chamber, get to know their colleagues, the more likelihood we have of folks that are willing to work across party lines, develop relationships, be able to actually move things down the middle, which is what most of us want. I also believe that it's really important, the financial disclosure is really important. So we know that Michigan is one of very few states that do not require our legislative candidates to disclose their personal finances. And we saw from all the way up to the presidential election how important it is to have that kind of integrity and that kind of transparency in elected officials. And I wholeheartedly support it.
Thank you. Ms. Glenn?
For that question, I can tell you that when I got elected, that I firmly believed that term limits were called elections. And this had been up for discussion for a long period of time, but I can tell you when this proposal came up, I saw things I never thought I would see with deal making and spending and all kinds of things going on. And on that day, I absolutely cast a vote against. What the financial disclosure does is it doesn't come into effect until after you're elected. I have voted to support financial disclosure for public. One of the first bills I introduced both terms was also the Freedom of Information Act, because I do believe the governor and the legislature should be completely open for FOIA. I think transparency is how we earn the respect and the trust of our public that we work for. I have 90,000 bosses, and I want to be as transparent and open with them as I possibly can. So I started one way, and after serving and seeing that day, I voted to not support the term limits, because what I could see is that if you were in the same seat and did not have to go for another office, that you could easily become entrenched and continue that crazy spending and the deal trading that I saw go on that day. So I went in with one point of view and came out with another. So I would encourage you to do your research and decide where you come down and what you think is important for you. Is it more important that we serve for 12 years in one house and to have 12 years in the other, or that after 6 years we have to change or go back to regular life? And the same thing in the Senate. Do you want us to only be able to be there for 8 years, or do you want us to be there for 12? I think the most important thing is transparency. I would want the financial closure to be now and not after we're elected. I think it's tough to make a decision on a candidate if you don't see the financial disclosure until after they have been elected. Harder to make a decision. So do your research. There's a little bit on both sides, and make the decision that's best for you.
Thank you. Ms. Rivett? Do you have a 1 minute reply?
I would. The reality is this proposal actually reduces the amount of time that people can spend in public office, reduces the amount of time for there to be career politicians who are taking up seats and forgetting and creating that distance between themselves and their constituents. But what I didn't hear is you actually talk about, Representative Glenn, if you believe in that financial transparency, then pass a law to make it happen. So it's one thing to have the position against this proposal because of the semantics, but you serve in the House in a majority, a supermajority as a fact, get the financial disclosure passed.
I know, she's still
there. Oh, I was waiting for the okay to make sure I wasn't stepping on your time. Rules are important. I have supported and voted for financial disclosure, and I am hopeful with the next election, with some new legislators, that we can actually get it passed. and get the governor's signature on it. I think one of the reasons it stumbled both times in the Senate was they were continuing to negotiate with the executive and could not get where they could get the executive sign off on it. So Foley will continue to push for that and campaign on that and disclose that. And I'm happy, as you guys know, office hours. In fact, it's really nice to look out and see so many of you here. So many of you have been at my office hours over the last 3 years. So thanks for coming. You know that we don't always agree when you come in, but you know there's always an open door and you're always heard. And I appreciate hearing both points of view. So do your research and determine which one you want. Do you want us to be there maybe 14 years? I think what we've seen is with the term limits, the way they are split, that the time that we spend in Lansing is less than if we were able to do 12 in each house. But do your research and decide what's best for you. Thank you.
Ms. Glenn, you have the first chance on the next question. Do you support or oppose Proposition 22-2, Promote the Vote, the proposed amendment to the state constitution that will appear on our ballots? Why or why not? And please be specific.
Thank you, Kim, for that question. There are some things that I really like about that, and there are some things that I am very, very uncomfortable with. So I'm going to be a no on that one. What I could tell you right now is that 90% of the population believes that ID should be part of the requirement, and I agree with that. And this would not allow that to be a requirement, but I think it's important. I mean, you've got to have ID if you get cough syrup. You have to have ID for any kind of government assistance. In fact, the Department of Health and Human Services, the first question they're supposed to ask when you come in is, are you registered to vote? And if you're not registered to vote, how do we help you vote? And they get them registered and help with IDs. So I think it's incredibly important that we make sure everybody's registered and they're required to vote. But I do think we should have to be showing an ID for that. I also have concerns with early voting. I like how things are set up now where you can submit that ballot and you can turn it in. One of the problems I see, and one of the reasons that we don't count those ballots early, is because unfortunately some people actually pass away from the time they cast their ballot until then. It's a small number, but it's up to the job of the county clerks and the Secretary of State to make sure that those ballots are not processed and not counted. So there's just a few things like that that give me a lot of concerns about it. But biggest thing that I hear out is people want to make it easier to vote and harder to cheat. And I think voter ID, which is universally supported, is one of those things that both sides, both parties, we actually voted in the legislature to make sure that we fund ID for anybody that might need one and to make it easier for them to get one. So thank you for that question.
Thank you. Ms. Rivett, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you very much. I wholeheartedly support Proposition 2. I believe that access to voting is a fundamental right. It's not a belief, it just is a fact. And the reality is, according to the Detroit News poll this morning, 70% of the state agrees with me. But I really believe that this rhetoric that exists what we have seen is repeated attacks on our election process, repeated attacks on the process in the wake of the last presidential election. And in Michigan, we had 250 audits, no findings. We had a Republican-led Senate Oversight Committee that found no evidence of widespread systemic fraud. Yet my opponent has actually called for a forensic audit, which would actually cost the state millions of dollars, in spite of 250 other audits that have already happened. It's about throwing gasoline on a fire of people who are questioning the process of democracy. There's a lot of debate about voter ID, but that is a political game to distract from what we're really trying to do in Prop 2, that a furthering of the work of Voters Not Politicians that happened 2 years ago that was so widely supported. And it is about making sure that people can vote, making sure that they can do it in a way that is accessible to them. And when I am knocking doors, and we've knocked 40,000 of them, many of them in the city of Saginaw, what we hear from particularly African American residents and people living in poverty is that ID is often a barrier. But It's not as if anybody can walk in on the street and vote. You have to be registered. You have to sign an affidavit of identity. This is not a throwing away of regulations and accessing. It's about making sure that more people have access to voting, which is a fundamental right.
Okay, Ms. Glenn.
Well, I am hopeful that you, like I, when we run into somebody who's not registered to vote, we make sure that they have the ability to register to vote. And it's not a question of who they're going to vote for, but we want to make sure they want to vote. So just in the last week, the legislature, along with the governor, came to an agreement on a bipartisan set of packages to work on voter integrity. So they're going to add a chain of custody for ballot boxes, because I know a lot of people had concerns about that. They also are expanding polling locations, because I know schools have become less comfortable with that being a voting location. So that's going to increase accessibility as well. And also, it's going to require that our voter rolls actually get cleaned. We've had a couple of audits by the Auditor General, which is a nonpartisan group, has found our voter rolls are heavily outdated and really need to be cleaned up. So all of that has been done bipartisanly in agreement with the governor. I'm looking forward to her signature. I haven't looked. She might have signed it today. But I think everybody can agree that those are great projects, great proposals, and they're going to be a win-win for everybody. And again, if you're out knocking doors for anybody and they don't know how to, please get them the information so they can register and they can vote.
Ms. Rivett?
I love to hear you talk about that. I think it is so important, and further is an example of under the leadership of Governor Whitmer, we have been able to, and Jocelyn Benson, we have been able to have an election system that is free of any fraud, that has the utmost amount of integrity, and it's only getting stronger. So the ability to expand access, expand early voting, follow the chain of custody around the voting locations, these are things that make me really confident that the more people we can get to the ballot box, the better off we are and the more fundamental that right is.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Rivett, you get the first shot at question number three. Do you support or oppose Proposition 22-3 or Reproductive Rights for All, the proposed amendment to the state constitution that will appear on our ballots? Why or why not? And please be specific.
Okay. Well, let me start by saying that I am strongly in support of Prop 3. I believe that we need to embed in our state constitution the protections that we had under Roe v. Wade. When the Dobbs decision came forward, it did a couple of things. It, for the very first time in our country's history, removed a fundamental right that women have been enjoying for the entirety of my lifetime. The other thing that it did is call into question other fundamental rights and allowed Michigan's law on the books from 1931 to come into play. What that law will do is put physicians and nurses in jail after being convicted of a felony. It will also force 12 and 14-year-old girls who are victims of rape to carry a child to term, even when the rape was perpetuated by members of their own family. It is extreme. It is out of touch with families. It's out of touch with folks in this district. And I believe that we need to embed our rights that existed under Roe.
Ms. Glenn.
Well, this is going to be an issue that we also disagree on. I firmly am opposed to that proposition. When I look at it, over the years, Michigan has come together and put together protections for women. They've put in health and safety standards. They've put parental oversight and any number of things that protect our children and our women. So Proposal 3 actually gets rid of all of those. It allows late-term partial birth abortion, which not even 10% of the entire population of Michigan support. So when we're looking at extreme, I would say that's about as extreme as you can get. I just watched a movie in the last month called 13 Lives. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's the story of the 12 soccer players and their coach that were trapped in a cave in Thailand when it rained much sooner and monsoon season hit earlier than expected. Thousands of people spent 2 weeks trying to find if these 13 individuals were alive. They spent 2 weeks. When they found him, they had been basically starving for 2 weeks. Over 10,000 people got involved in this rescue effort to bring every one of those children and their coach out alive. I think it's absolutely critical that we apply that same level of support to women and to children. I think it's, if we're going to take 10,000 people in 2 weeks, why don't we support that same amount of support for our women? Why don't we, well, because a lot of it's been vetoed. We had $10 million in maternal health care and various other things that were all vetoed. We tried to do a veto override, but we're not able to get that done. But I think the most important thing is that we make sure that our women are safe and cared for, and their children are too. And I'm pro-life. I have never shied away from that. And if you, like me, believe that those children are children, then you're going to do everything you can to protect them. And I'll stop there because my time's up.
Ms. Rivett, do you have a reply?
I absolutely do. So Proposition 3 does not, in fact, allow abortion on demand up until the moment of delivery. It does not, in fact, allow for third trimester abortions. If a third trimester abortion with a viable fetus would result in a criminal prosecution, and there are any numbers of laws already on the books in Michigan to do that. It is a scare tactic to get you to be confused about the proposal. I also want to say that there are situations every day with women that are heartrending, that are horrible. And when that decision needs to be made, it needs to be made by a woman and her medical profession, her physician, not politicians in Lansing, period.
Okay. Ms. Glenn?
Thank you. I would like to reply. I'm going to disagree. When that law states, and you should go read it, it wipes out every single law that's on the book, because this goes into the Constitution, which means it supersedes every single law we have on the book that outlaws partial birth abortion, that requires health and safety standards, that requires only a doctor is able to perform abortion. They're gone. I can also tell you that I have some very, very close friends that would not be here if abortion was legal. And I can, having known them for over 20 years, I know the impact they have had on the community. And they're amazing people. And I'm going to go right back to, what can we do to support the women? Can we financially support them? If they want adoption, how can we support adoption? That money has been vetoed, and I will continue to fight for that and for women and children every single day.
Ms. Glenn, you're up with the next question. Do you support or oppose increasing the age limit for assault weapons from 18 to 21 years? Again, why or why not? And be specific.
So I've been a strong supporter of the Constitution and our Second Amendment. What you will find is our cities that have the strongest gun control laws also have the highest crime rates. It is absolutely important that we make sure that no criminals have access to guns, but that we also allow families to protect themselves and their loved ones. I can tell you that crime has risen dramatically in Michigan over the last few years. I actually looked up some statistics, and they were quite alarming. Carjackings have increased 764%. Violent crimes up almost 13%. Murders up 30%. Aggravated assault up 25%. Saginaw, which is part of this new Senate seat, is the number 3 most violent city, violent crime city in the U.S., and number 4 for murder. At the same point in time, being able to protect yourself, we've also heard a lot of calls to defund the police, which has decreased the number of people that are willing to go into law enforcement. It's one of the reasons that I supported legislation that would actually apply for scholarships, because when they're going to training, whether it's for local or sheriff or the state police, they don't get paid to do any of that. They've got to give up those jobs while they go and work that. So we're going to continue to support the police. We're going to continue to support law-abiding citizens, and we're going to do everything we can to make sure that everything dangerous is out of the hands of people who should not have them. We've also supported money for mental health. so that we can continue to, there's just been a lot of things that have happened under COVID, and mental health care really, those needs really spiked. So we'll probably get to that in a later question, but thank you for that question.
Okay, Ms. Rivett?
Mind reading the question again?
Do you support or oppose increasing the age limit for assault weapons from 18 to 21 years? Please explain why or why not.
Okay, thank you. So I support the Second Amendment. Everybody I know supports the Second Amendment. It's a right, but like other rights in the Constitution, it comes with responsibilities. And we've got work to do. We've got work to do. So I think it's important that dangerous people not be able to access weapons. Michigan has a loophole that allows for folks that are proven to be dangerous, that are proven to be in relationships where they have threatened harm, that is open and that needs to be closed. I support background checks with carve outs for families. So in my family, my favorite thing to do every single year was go with my dad to scout out his hunting spot. I never actually hunted with him. Frankly, I talked too much. He didn't want me out there with him. But what he did, it was a family legacy. It was a thing that was important and a critical part of our culture. But we have to do something about the weapons that are being used, frankly, to slaughter a lot of our children in schools, happening right here, an hour away from where we're sitting. There are loopholes that need to be closed, and I fully support prosecutors' ability and right to prosecute on some of the federal crimes that are already on the books. There are so many things that we can do. I also want to say that I am a strong supporter of the police. As a Bay City Commissioner, I have consistently voted to increase the budget for our police, voted for 4 additional positions, and have been a friend to the police in our community. I do not support defunding the police, nor do anybody I know, frankly. I simply don't know anybody who wants to defund the police. Maybe that's happening in other parts of the country, but it's not happening here.
Thank you. Ms. Glenn?
Thank you. Again, I think it's absolutely important that people who should not have weapons, that we make sure they do not have weapons, and that we continue to allow families to protect themselves. It's just going to take longer for people to respond as we don't have as many law enforcement officers out there. It's also important to know that we have funded at the state level and a bipartisan level the ability to harden our schools and increase mental health counselors both in schools and outside of schools. There's, I think, almost $250 million in this last budget that will go to improve that, which I think is going to be a huge help. It's going to help us find things before they happen instead of responding to them after they happen. Nobody wants some of the tragedies we've seen. My pro-life position applies to all of our kids and all of us at all ages. It's important that we protect everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Rivett?
I feel like we deserve a gold star on the timing thing. Okay, so let me just be really clear that I think that there are some really carefully drafted red flag laws. There are things that have been introduced and sat in the legislature unmoved that call for due process with expedited judicial review, meaning that people can't get cut off from their access and their Second Amendment right without ample evidence. We have to think about substantial penalties for people who have ill will or false claims around the red flag laws. And we have to actually prosecute people who are putting guns in the hands of dangerous people, like the parents who bought their son a gun for Christmas in the midst of a psychotic break that resulted in the Oxford shooting. These are the things that are important. These are the things that protect our children. And these are the things that attach the responsibility when it comes to that right.
Thank you. Ms. Rivett, you're up for the next question.
All right.
Do you think the 2020 election in Michigan was properly conducted? If not, where were the problems and what is your solution?
I'm looking for my notes. So I'm going to read these numbers again. Yes. Yes, I think the election was properly conducted. 250 audits. 250 just in our state. A Republican-led legislative Oversight Committee that reported, and I'm quoting here, found no evidence of widespread or systemic fraud. Zero. The accusations, the films that have been put out into the digital universe, calling these things in question, are a threat to our democracy, completely invalid, and throwing gasoline on the fire of people who are hurting, who are angry. And instead of giving solutions, we have a group of people who are trying to divide us and call into question the decisions that are made. And I frankly am astounded that we, and I'm hearing all the time when I'm talking to voters, worry for our democracy, worry that their votes are going to count, worry that we're going to look down the road and have to say to our children that the country is in danger. It's dangerous to call into question that, particularly after where there has been court case after audit after court case that has definitively proven that that election was valid.
Thank you. Ms. Glenn?
Kim, thank you for that question. As you alluded to, there are a lot of people that still have concerns. 30% of the people still have concerns about the election, which is why I supported an audit. You guys probably heard a lot about the audit in Arizona, but once it was done, it got really, really quiet. So I supported the audit so that people could see everything and could develop a comfort level, because as we talked about earlier on in this evening, it's important that people know they can vote, that we make sure they're registered and they feel secure and safe and they can vote in a free way. I'm gonna revert back and talk about that bipartisan bill package. That was done, again, because all of us here, Republicans and Democrats, we hear that there are still concerns out there. So what can we do? What can we do? The Secretary of State had two very poor audit findings that the rolls were not cleaned up. And so requiring those to be cleaned up on a timely basis and making sure that people feel that they can vote safely, that it's going to count. I mean, you guys, they've been talking about voter fraud since Kennedy, right? They wrote about it in the books. So, and I think when things happened at the TCF Center, when they put the covers up there, I think that created a lot of questions for people. So allowing additional training for poll challengers, so there's that transparency, that chain of custody, I think will bring a lot of comfort and support for people that are still hurting and still concerned over what they saw last time. Thank you.
Ms. Rivett, 1 minute.
That forensic audit in Arizona cost $6 million, and we have already had 250 of them in Michigan. But what I didn't hear is you answer the question, and I would love to hear you say whether or not you think Joe Biden is the rightful president of the United States.
Well, let me be clear. Every time you put gas in your car and you look at the gas prices, I can guarantee you that Joe Biden is the president.
Got it?
We're good.
All right, you're on to the next question. Recently, national test scores indicate that students 9 years of age suffered worrisome declines in reading and math. What are your legislative priorities to increase educational performance throughout the state?
Thank you for that question. Literacy, when I ran, was one of my top priorities and will continue to be one of my top priorities. We have put some really key funding into building our teachers. We talked to a lot of teachers who were just expressing that they did not have the best set of skills to teach our kids. And so these programs bring mentors into the school and they teach the teachers how to improve their reading skills, and then they move on. Those programs have happened in Midland, they've happened in Bay, they've happened in Clio area, and what we have found is the reading scores have come up in that. There's an amazing program called Beyond Basics that's being run down in Detroit. Absolutely phenomenal program. If we can get that ramped up to apply all over the state, I think it's once and for all that we would be able to solve the literacy programs. And I think math follows right along with that. You've got to be able to read. And you know that reading level starts at 3. And then after that, your learning is based on your reading. So literacy will continue to be one of my number one priorities, and absolutely math is right there. I mean, if there's only a few subjects that we could teach in school, those two have got to be number one, because they're the building blocks for absolutely everything else. Doesn't matter if you want a college education, if you want to start your own business, or you want one of those amazing gold collar jobs that are out there in the skilled trades. You have to be able to read. And when we don't equip our children with those, with that learning loss and recovery, which is why we put additional funding in there and we'll continue to put additional funding in there, we put them in a scenario where we have penalized them for life. So that is one of our number one priorities. We have absolutely got to put our kids first and make sure that they've got the literacy skills they need, the math skills they need, and the mental health as we recover so that they can do whatever they want and we've got their back.
Thank you. Ms. Rivett?
This is my favorite topic. So I have a master's degree in education. I'm the former chief of staff at the State Department of Education, and I have quite literally spent my entire life in this area. So let me just say that we, in the 1980s, Michigan had one of the best educational systems in the country. And we have seen our educational outcomes continuously drop decade by decade to the point that we are right now 48th out of 50 in many, many of our outcomes. We have the lowest African-American literacy rate in the country, worse than the Mississippi Delta. That is an existential problem for our economy. We have to fix this. But what I do know is that when I was being raised in the 70s, there were nurses and social workers in the schools. And we have more kids than ever that are experiencing trauma, that don't have access to health care. We need to get back to that. But we also need to evaluate the 20 years of standardized tests, not just one, not just two, but often multiple tests, day after day after day, in our schools that have not had anything to do and have not increased educational outcomes. So I support lowering the amount of time that we can test our kids in the K-12 system. I support an expanded access to early childhood education so that every child from birth through five has access to developmental opportunities, really high quality developmental opportunities that also provide critically important childcare that fuels our economy. I think that we need to get back to a focus on real world skills that kids need. The content is important, but they also need critical thinking, and they need to be able to learn how to collaborate with other people, how to communicate, these skills that you need in the workforce. We also have to make sure that parents are deeply involved in the education of their kids, that the decision making is transparent and done locally.
Thank you. Ms. Glenn.
Thank you. I will say this is probably something that we're really in a lot of agreement on. I've actually got a bill that would post around from state law. I've got it right here if you want to see it, that parents and guardians are to be part of the school system. It's going to work together. All of the teachers I know, my siblings included, believe that they get better outcomes when the parents are involved. The more they collaborate and work together, the better outcomes we have for our kids. And the earlier we start that, the better their outcomes are overall. We've had some wonderful programs, some wraparound services here in the Midland school system that have really worked. When they've got kids not showing up and they find out maybe they just need an alarm clock or maybe they just need these other things. These programs that have worked successfully to increase the competency, the reading, and the skill set in some of our most at-risk children need to be expanded and duplicated around the state because they work. This area is incredibly collaborative, and we look for the reason things are not working, and then we come up with the solutions, and then it's time that we share those. There's amazing things going on in this area and in other areas as well. If we can upscale the Detroit program and this one, I think we can solve these problems within a few years. Thank you.
Ms. Rivett?
I do not think that we're going to solve the educational crisis in Michigan by expanding programs. I think we actually have to put dollars in the hands of parents that help their kids access after-school programs, youth development programs, early childhood programs. I think that we have to completely retool our teacher accountability and our education accountability system. We have to decouple teacher evaluation from our standardized test scores, and we have to completely rewrite the entire system of how we are rating and grading our schools. Other states have done this over the last 20 years. States like Tennessee, North Carolina, Massachusetts, Colorado. There is a model that we can follow. We don't have to invent this ourselves. But what we know is that the conversations in the legislature right now about education are more about issues, like which books we ought to be banning in our school libraries, which, by the way, the answer is we should not be banning To Kill a Mockingbird, right? That's a no. But rather than the things that are actually going to move educational outcomes forward, and that goes, that has been happening for the last 20 years.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Rivett, you're up for the next question. What will you do to support efforts to upgrade the Great Lakes region's drinking and waste infrastructure, wastewater infrastructure?
Wow, I really wish there were an easy answer to this question. So as a Bay City Commissioner, it's something that local municipalities deal with every single day, making very difficult choices about what to fund. The reality is we have, for 30 years, defunded our infrastructure. And that's true of water and sewer in the same way it's true of our lack of investment in things like broadband. So one of the things that we did in Bay City is to really focus on the lead lines. We know that while they are coated and not danger in the drinking water right now, they have to be our absolute priority in replacing. We prioritize not just our the federal funds from COVID, but also in our general fund to make sure that we are accelerating that development. We have to support right now our local municipalities to be able to do the repair of our water systems and our sewer systems. We were able to actually accelerate this in Bay City while at the same time reducing sewer rates for our residents, which is important. We've seen a multi-decade continuous cuts in revenue sharing, which are dollars that come from the state to fuel our local municipalities. And those dollars have been cut to the point that infrastructure has suffered because there aren't other there are fewer dollars in local municipalities than there used to be. I think the state can play a really important role, one, in just funding the replacement of that infrastructure, but also in incentivizing communities to do this infrastructure work together. So there is a surplus right now. What if the state came in and said, hey, if you work regionally on these problems, we're going to match you. Every dollar you put in, we'll put in 25 cents to create a carrot that encourages moving across county lines for us to take this issue on together as a region.
Ms. Glenn.
Well, I've been privileged to be chair of the Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy Subcommittee. So this has been a topic that has been top of our list and looking for more ways to pull in funding because it is really important. I was really privileged this year and actually very surprised to receive an award, a Legislative of the Year award from the groundwater because they know my commitment to making sure that we've got good, clean water. There's additional money in the budget to make sure that that good, clean water is available in our schools while the upgrades are going on. It has been a long time since we have invested the right amount of money in infrastructure, and it's going to be unfortunately longer than I would like. It would be great if we could just snap our fingers, wouldn't it? And it was all taken care of in just a few minutes, and that it didn't cost you more tax dollars, and that you could still pay your bills. Wouldn't that be amazing? That would be amazing. There have been some terrible things that have happened that have had to do with failures in infrastructure. And so investing in infrastructure is absolutely key. One of the bills I introduced, it was called an employee ombudsman. And this is going to be a nonpartisan position. It passed very largely bipartisan out of the House. But I believe that if this person had been in place, that when things were going wrong in Flint, that this would have been the first place to report and to catch it before we ever dealt with our kids and the lead levels that were in Flint. The same thing with the dams, that if this person had been in place, there would have been a great place to report and say, hey, dam safety inspectors don't actually leave their offices. They just read the reports that come in. We've now funded so they do go out and do the inspections. We're not the only area that struggles with dams. There's an area up in Traverse City that I've got a very close watch on because of things going up there. One of my Democrat colleagues has got a big issue with her dam over in Kalamazoo. But we've also got water. It's been great to have a bipartisan committee to work on where we're represented from around the state and we can work collaboratively on how we can best come together to fix these problems that affect the entire state. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Rivett?
First, what I want to say is there were multiple red flags in the city of Flint from residents who were showing up begging for someone to pay attention to the condition of that water. Same is true of the dams here. But what I really want to say about infrastructure is this is a tough problem. There are a lot of tough problems before us. And I think the reason we are not getting traction, why there's a lot of talk and introduce bills, but no actual action, is that we have very few legislators left that are willing to work in the middle, across the aisle, across sector, on really tough things. We're getting a lot of easy solutions, nibbling around the edges, and there are some big things that we need to shift. So what we really need to do is be very conscious about electing folks that are not tied to party, that are not tied to political games, and are interested in getting something done and working on big issues that may take several years to fix.
Okay. Are we ready? There is no doubt that our state has underinvested in infrastructure for years, whether it's water, whether it's bridges, whether it's broadband, but all of those things have held our state back from growing, and it's time that we take the money and we spend it wisely. It's time that we make sure that that money goes directly to the sources and that we don't put programs in place that each take a slice so that it doesn't get to where it actually does the work it needs to do. One of the ways we do that is we put it in the Treasury Department, where it's just their job to write the check and send it out. It's not their job to put together a program where you have to apply, and if you're a small community, you don't have somebody in place who can fill out the crazy complicated grants. It's been a privilege to be able to cut through that red tape for municipalities and be able to help them get some of that, but we also need to be able to remove those barriers so you don't need to come to the legislature to ask for help to get what we promised you. It needs to be able to go directly to you. So it's time that we make sure that our government works best for us, that the phone calls are returned, and that whatever forms are required are simple and easy and do not require experts to fill them out.
Thank you. Ms. Glenn, you're going to be first on what I think is probably going to be our last question. What are your legislative priorities to address the issues that arise from income inequality?
Well, I have been a big proponent of making sure, especially now with the surplus and the amount of money that's coming in, that we do whatever we can to get that money back to the individuals. It is absolutely critical. So I have voted to reduce the income tax. I voted to exempt senior income. I voted for a $500 child tax care credit, which I think is one of those big helpers. Property tax, especially for our veterans. Do you know that if you're a veteran and you're 99% disabled, you don't have to pay property taxes? But if you're 98% disabled, you have to pay 100%. So that's one that we're working on and hoping to get done by year's end. I voted to exempt taxes from diapers and feminine hygiene products, to suspend the gas tax, and I have voted to triple the earned income tax credit, which I think is one of those force multipliers that will really make a difference. It's one of those cases where you get these new families, and we have the ability to give them resources so that they can get to the next level and they no longer need us. I'm a big proponent of looking at the ALICE population and saying, what can we do to get you to the next level? How do we help and support you so that we're not holding you back, but that we are empowering you to get where you want to be? So that is a great question. It is absolutely a priority of mine to continue to support. And you know, with a rising tide, all boats are lifted. And it's important that we focus to make sure that those at the bottom level get the extra support they need to get to the level that they should be. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Rivett.
So this is a problem. Income inequality is a problem that was really made clear during the pandemic. But the reality is many of our families were struggling before the pandemic. So right now in Michigan, 6 out of 10 jobs pay less than $47,000 a year. So think about that. Are you really able to support a family, save for retirement, go on the occasional vacation on $47,000 a year? People are struggling. The year that I was born, Michigan had the highest median income in the country. Now we are one of the lowest in the Midwest. We have spent 30 years constructing policy that created stress on the middle class, that made it harder and harder for working families to make it. And this isn't a simple switch. So it is really important that we have some solutions within the tax code. But in order to actually think about how to, in the long term, address the two-tier economy where we have a lot of people who have a lot of money and resources and too many people that don't, A million children in Michigan live in houses where their basic needs are not consistently met. 30,000 in this district. We cannot economically thrive in that space. So we have to first start, it's important, things like a tax break that I support and have worked to build a coalition around for working families, really important. We have to focus money that doesn't just get money in everybody's hands, but rather immediately in the hands of working families. We also have to think differently about our economy. We have to make choices around economic development, education, and talent recruitment that work toward more high-paying jobs in our region, so it's not a temporary gift from the legislature, but rather a different infrastructure that allows all of us to thrive.
Ms. Glenn?
Thank you. Absolutely, we need to do permanent solutions, not a one-time thing, but something that permanently changes anything that holds our people back. So all of the tax things, that helps. But it's also important that we remove regulations from business that require them to hire extra people just to do paperwork, which means they can't pay their employees as much because they've got to get through regulations that don't really add anything to our economy. I mean, I look around, we've got areas in this district that are thriving and areas that are not as thriving. So let's look at those areas and duplicate what they're doing. Let's look at the schools that are doing well and look at what they're doing and let's duplicate that. But I think there's a ton of bipartisan work that we can do together to really solve these hard problems. And I am up to the task and looking forward to it.
Thank you, Ms. Rivett.
It's just bigger than that. So when 40% of our population is in the ALIS population, and you need only go door to door in Saginaw to understand that it's not a couple of programs that are gonna fix what's happening there. We have had decades of disinvestment in the neighborhoods. We have schools that are struggling with bottoming out academic outcomes. And we have people who are living in neighborhoods with no hope. There's no public transportation. We have to be able to figure out how we raise the median income in Michigan. And if all of our policy is focused on raising that median income to a level where we can prosper, like what we see in Minnesota, then what we'll be able to do is create a place where more of us are thriving rather than trying to access programs that help in a small amount of space, but not a large space, not a long-term or a sustaining space.
All right, and now we're ready for closing statements. Ms. Glenn, you go first. 1 minute.
Thank you. I have a proven track record of results and of working with people, of having an open door and extremely good constituent service. Every day, it doesn't matter whether I'm at the grocery store or knocking doors, we often find people that need help navigating government, and we've been able to help them navigate that and get them the help they need, the resources or answer the questions. I'm not afraid to be working with you side by side, whether it's cleaning out basements in Sanford, whether it's painting your house, or whether it's navigating Lansing, where you've come up with a great idea that you want us to work on in Lansing. I will work with anybody of goodwill to do whatever needs to be done to get this district thriving. This is an amazing district. We have three amazing communities. And as collaborative as they are, they all have very different needs. And so being able to meet those needs and being able to work collaboratively across all lines has been one of the things I've been best at, whether it's been working with Amos O'Neill, who's become a very, very dear friend over in Saginaw, or my dear friend, who's also a state representative down in Detroit, Karen Witsit. But thank you.
Ms. Rivett.
I'm not a career politician. I'm a mom, 6 kids. I'm a wife. I'm a community leader. And I've got 30 years of experience working in public policy on behalf of children, families, and the economy. It's time for us to have something different. This campaign has gotten nasty on many levels. But our politics don't have to be this way. It is possible for us to come together as neighbors, as a community, to vision something better, and to be able to move education in economic outcomes in our state, to be able to bring high-paying jobs to our region. There's a future we can look toward if we agree to work together. I've got big things I've accomplished in my career, working across sectors, working across party lines, and I can bring that experience to the state legislature. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's it, voters. Candidates for State Senate District 35 have given you a few of their views. We hope something said here tonight will help you in your voting decisions. And in a few minutes, we'll hear from candidates for Michigan State House District 95. In the interim, we are presenting you again, as I said earlier, the information on the three state proposals that will be on the November ballot. And with that, you may now express your appreciation.
This program is presented by a community producer through Midland Community Television. The City of Midland and MCTV are not responsible for the content of the program. The views presented do not necessarily represent those of the City of Midland or MCTV. If you would like to produce your own program, contact MCTV at 837-3474 or access our website, cityofmidlandmi.gov/MCTV. We hope you enjoy the following presentation.